son. Where'd you find this?
Starting already. All right, cool.
You've got Harry? What?
What's no, up, we, Tony? What's we, up, Ryan?
Hey, we can cut all this.
I was just gonna say I've got like two shout outs and a big one. I'll just make the shout outs really short so we don't make this episode too long.
Well, it's episode 84.
And the audience is gonna get 3 hours of fantasy content because we're in the sicko moments now of the real fucking boots to the ground knowledge.
Yeah, it's more likely right. than not. More likely than not, this episode will end up being two episodes just because we don't want you to have to sit through an hour 45. So let's start with our shout outs.
I wrote 1,700 words.
All of our listeners yeah. need to go on road trips every weekend so they can listen to the entirety of the 2 hour podcast.
We wrote a lot. So all right, Ryan, start us with your shout outs. Episode 84.
All right. So this, I'm loving 84 because, you know, we get to talk some tight end numbers.
Okay.
Right. So NFL shout out to Mr. Bob Trumpy, who I thought might be related to someone that we know, me and Tony mutually.
Yeah, one of my old roommates. Because he's
from Central Illinois and he
oh, shit.
Still lives there. But Bob Trumpy, former tight end, he actually has a few Bengals records, two Pro Bowls. So 1977, Trumpy continued to play for the Bengals until that year, earning two trips to the Pro Bowl. In a November 20th game against the Miami Dolphins during a driving rainstorm, Trumpy caught a 29-yard touchdown pass from quarterback Ken Anderson on a flea flicker play that involved three players handling the ball before it was thrown to him. First, Anderson handed the ball off to running back Archie Griffin, then pitched the ball to receiver John McDaniel, running in the opposite direction. McDaniel then handed the ball back to Anderson, setting up his 29-yard touchdown pass. The Bengals went on to defeat the Dolphins 23-17, knocking them out of playoff contention. Trumpy said it was magic. Then he went on to be like a broadcast person after that. Finished his 10-year career with 298 receptions for 4,600 yards and 35 touchdowns in 128 games. And actually his 4,600 receiving yards, 35 touchdown receptions, and 15.4 yards average per catch are the most ever by a Bengals tight end.
There you go.
Bob Trumpy.
Take that, Hayden Hurst.
Yeah, fuck you. All right, I have a relatively short one. I don't have anything super groundbreaking or in depth. I just kind of want to talk about a dude that whips ass. He wore jersey number 84. His name was Herman Moore. Herman Moore was born in 1969 in Virginia. Dominated in football, track, and basketball in high school. Played college ball, University of Virginia. He's third still to this day in his high school's all-time receptions record, behind two future NFL players, someone named Billy McMullen, and the all-time leading receiver at his high school football program is Olamide Zaccheaus.
We know him.
Okay. The Detroit Lions drafted Herman Moore with pick 10 of the first round in the 1991 NFL draft. He only caught 11 passes for 135 yards, and the reason was because he played with contacts in college and he didn't want to play with contacts in the pros, and so he never disclosed his eye impairment to the team. So he played with blurry, shitty vision for the entire first season.
Wow.
So they communicate, as adults usually should, and they get it figured out. In 1992, his second year, he caught 51 passes for 966 yards and 4 touchdowns. Detroit won the division, and they beat Dallas 38-7 in the first round of the playoffs. This was their first playoff win since 1957, and they haven't won a playoff game since.
Get him back on the field.
Wow. So that means that the Lions haven't won a playoff game since Kurt Cobain was still alive before he was murdered by Billy Corgan of the Smashing Pumpkins.
Oh, wow.
You heard it here first.
That's some deep fan theory. We could do a whole episode about that.
We will catch us in the when it gets to August and we have nothing to talk about. So he sets the then NFL record for most receptions in a season with 123 in 1995, 1,686 yards and 14 touchdowns. I don't know if you remember him, Ryan, from the 90s, but like he was a big bodied receiver who could beat you vertically, underneath, and after the catch. So defenses were totally just steamrolled by this dude. He sets the mold for the like Andre Johnson, DK Metcalf, AJ Brown type of like Hoss receiver.
Sure. Yeah.
95, 96, 97, Herman Moore had over 100 catches each year. And some of my earliest Bears memories are this dude and Barry Sanders just wrecking. Just wrecking. It's actually more impressive that they had a Hall of Fame running back and an all-star wide receiver and couldn't make the fucking playoffs.
That's crazy.
Defense wins championships.
So listen to this. In 1995, on Thanksgiving Day, the Lions had the like greatest offensive game ever. Moore, other receiver Brett Perryman, and third receiver Johnny Morton all had over 100 yards receiving, and Barry Sanders rushed for 138 yards, a 44-38 Lions win. I'm going to wrap up Herman Moore here. His play declines over the next few years. He retired in 2002 after three games with the Giants. I do have a fun fact for you before we leave Herman Moore. At the time he retired, he was the NFL's all-time leading receiver on Thursday with the most receptions and yards. Those numbers have been passed by now. So he's fifth all-time on the Thursday receiving yards list, but all four of the people ahead of him started playing while Thursday night football existed. Herman Moore is fifth on that list because of Thanksgiving Day games only.
Yeah, take that, Amazon.
Right.
That's fucking awesome. So he's on Twitter. He gives a lot of hot takes about the Lions. And his most recent tweet was about entering a business partnership with Paladin Cards. And he sat in on a session in March where they opened... they unboxed packs of Pokemon cards. So I reached out to Walker Kelly from Football Absurdity and I said, what Pokemon do you think Herman Moore is? And they said Scyther. I said Kangaskhan, and that's my number 84, Herman Moore.
Nice. Herman Moore.
Herman Moore.
All right. We're going.
I'll do my next really quick shout out.
All right.
Oh, good idea.
Good pacing.
We'll do Doug Cosby, no relation to the famous Cosby.
Okay,
he actually
good.
Spells it different. He spells it with an IE instead of a Y.
Okay.
It's cute.
Old timey.
Another tight end, 84, played for Dallas Cowboys and actually set a lot of their records before Jason Witten came along and stuff. He went to some no-name college, De Anza College, and then he transferred to Holy Cross, and then he transferred to Santa Clara. But ultimately he was selected by the Dallas Cowboys in the third round, 76 overall, in the 1979 NFL draft. At that time, get this, the team's draft strategy through the time was to take the highest ranked player on their draft board, regardless of the position. So when the Cowboys' turn came up in the third round, the highest rated player on the board, guess who it was? It was a quarterback.
79?
Yeah.
Joe Namath.
Dandy Don Meredith.
No. Joe Montana.
Oh, that's who I meant. I said Joe Namath. God damn it. I want to kiss myself.
Fake fan.
However, the Cowboys at the time feeling that the quarterback position was in excellent shape because they had Roger Staubach, Danny White, and Glenn Carano. The Cowboys needed a tight end to join Billy Joe Dupree. And they deviated from their philosophy and they skipped on Joe Montana, who we all know was ultimately drafted by Frisco.
So Dallas passed over both Montana and then they had San Francisco jump in front of them to take Jerry Rice.
Yep.
Idiots.
Yeah.
Why do you think that beef happened?
Yeah, right? No shit.
He was kind of green in his first two seasons. He was like a backup mostly. But in 81, he won the starting position and did okay. 441 yards, a 14.7 yard average, four touchdowns, which at the time led the team. The four touchdowns, sorry. But in 83, he actually emerged as one of the league's top tight ends, making 46 receptions, at the time a franchise record for tight ends. Almost 600 yards and six touchdowns. And that was the first year he got invited to the Pro Bowl.
Do you think fantasy football leagues in the 1980s even had a tight end spot? Like,
it was six running backs.
Right. Yeah, right. Like, oh, Pro Bowl tight end, 46 catches in 16 games.
Right. 84, he broke his own record with 60 catches that year. Ooh. Which led the team and also was second among NFC tight ends. Second on the team with 780 yards and four touchdowns. Then in 85, he set a team record for receptions by a tight end for the third straight year with 64. He also established the franchise record for receiving yards in a season by a tight end at 793 and six touchdowns. And we all know that that record would later be broken by Jason Witten. But at the time, it was the franchise record. And then from then on, his production just fell, going to the Denver Broncos towards the end of his career. And he has a pretty healthy coaching career at his old University of Santa Clara. No NFL nods for his coaching career. But interesting fact, he is currently the head coach of the Bergamo Lions in Italy of the Italian Football League.
Hey!
I wonder if they shot their coach like my guy did, like on 80.
No, but they get all the gabagool they can eat.
Oh, yeah. Hey, that dude. So that dude carried his whole team in the decade before they got good, and he never got a ring.
Yep. Doug Oof. Cosby.
Sometimes he's got to be the guy who lays the foundation,
I guess. All right, Shane, what do you got?
You guys ready to go CTE?
Yeah, I mean, I'm always ready. That's half of what I look up when I look up for guys on the week. Who's got CTE?
We're going with King CTE himself, number 84, who I honestly would believe after I'm not even going to give you his life, his stats. I'm just going to read you the crazy shit that Mr. Big Chest Antonio Brown has done in his tenure at the NFL.
Let's go.
I firmly believe if he didn't quit in that Jets game, he'd be in the Hall of Fame. No matter all the shit that he's done, I really believe that they would have put him in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
So I'm going to laundry list this shit. So just be ready. All right. So number one, he was kicked out of Florida International University after fighting a security guard. Don't touch me. I'm the franchise. His second year in the league, he took a personal stretch limo to a charity event, had them open every single expensive bottle of wine, rejected them all, and refused to pay for it at a charity event, and then left. He threw fits over not getting enough targets. He trashed a condo and threw furniture out of a window with the 14th floor, which almost hit at some people, notably a kid. He killed an aquarium full of piranhas and refused to pay the man who installed the tank. He refused to play in week 17 of the Steelers. He dyed his mustache blonde. He refused to pay a chef because he thought he threatened him by placing a fish head in the freezer. The fish head was just being used as like a broth supplement.
Right, right.
He farted on a doctor, demanded a trade from the Steelers. Well, became Peyton, Mr.
Peyton Manning farted on a doctor when he was in college.
But,
so
yeah, but he's on announcing with his quirky brother, so it's okay.
That's true.
I mean, that's pretty bad too, because that's when Peyton was involved with Papa John's. So you know he was getting that good Papa farts.
So he became Mr. Big Chest, threw a big fit over Juju winning team MVP and trashed him all over social media. He nixed a trade that would have sent him to the Bills. He showed up to Raiders training camp in a hot air balloon. He held out and refused to show up to training camp because the NFL would not allow him to wear his old helmet and it wasn't up to their standard safety protocols. He froze his feet. He tried to paint his old helmet thinking that no one would notice that it was different. He acquired a newer version of the same model of helmet, which the NFL refused to let him use. He picked out a new helmet and finally showed up to the Raiders camp. Got fined by the Raiders for not attending camp. Tweeted the fines. Tried to fight Matt Mayock. Called him a cracker. Had to be held back by Vontaze Burfict. Then punted the football on the practice field and said, "Fine me for that." Got fined for that.
Yep. When Vontaze Burfict is the voice of reason, you know shit's gone wrong.
So I've heard from my brother who played against Vontaze in the past. He's a dirty as shit player, but as a person, he's chill. So like, I think there's that duality of you see the field and then you just become a monster.
Yeah, he's right. Just highly competitive, yeah.
All right, so then he released a video where that used John Gruden, who didn't know he was being recorded, which is illegal in California. He demanded a release from the Raiders. He was released. He has the video where he screams, "Grandma, I'm free," like a music video.
Yep.
He made a lot of crazy tweets saying stuff like, "The devil is a lie," a proverb about burning down a village, and he made a lot of crazy tweets at this time.
Yeah, wasn't it like the boy neglected by the village will return home and light it on fire or some shit like that?
Yep. Sick. Liked a tweet about Mayock getting sexually assaulted, signed with the Patriots, moved in with Tom Brady, the sexual assault allegations came out, the one where he's getting sued, the sexual harassment allegations came out, the one where he's not getting sued. He threatened the woman not suing him in a group text that included his lawyer and had a picture of the woman and her kids in the text message. He got released by the Patriots after 1 week, went off on a tweet storm that said a lot of crazy shit about a lot of people and was supportive of people sending death threats and sexual assault threats to the writer of the article detailing the sexual harassment allegations. Said he was done with the NFL. Went back to college via online classes. He tried to outsource his homework to Twitter. Wants to come back to the NFL. He filed several grievances to try and get more than $40 million from the Raiders and the Patriots, was ordered to show up to the deposition regarding trashing the condo, was accused of reprehensible behavior during the deposition, which included was but not limited to. He chanted over and over again as if a mantra, a narrative of his own warped concept of the proceeding. He acted like he was above the law. He would consistently be, when asked to answer a question, he would just say next question, which happened more than 10 times. He said that the Patriots would have to pay him anyway, so they might as well let him play. He treated a bunch of tweets about the Raiders using him for HBO ratings, and the Patriots tried to steal his stuff, and he kept using like a weird chicken metaphor. I don't know what that one was. I'd have to do more research. So he tried out for the Saints, brought an entourage and a film crew to shoot a music video with him when he was told specifically not to do that. He called out Robert Kraft for his rub and tug in Florida that happened. He tweeted, "No more white women 2020. The attorney that was representing him quit when in the condo suit. Police football youth league cut ties with AB because there was an irreparable rift between the two. He threw a bag of gummy candy dicks at the cops in a video he posted where he criticized them. He got dropped by his agent. He was involved in a dispute with movers where he threw rocks at the movers in the moving vans, which he didn't pay for. He's currently being investigated for battery. His trainer was arrested and is a suspect in the battery case. A warrant was issued for AB, turned himself into the jail. Rumors start to spread that he goes to Tampa or Seattle. He announces his retirement for like the third time. 2 days later, he says he wants to play again. NFL wraps up its investigation. They suspend him for 8 games. He signs with the Bucks for a year. He was accused of destroying a surveillance camera at a Florida gated community, throwing a bike at a security shack, and is not charged because the HOA feared retaliation because of his status. So then AB's former live-in chef alleges that he obtained a fake COVID-19 card, which is confirmed by the NFL. He's suspended for 3 games during the Jets game where they're losing. He removes his Paz jerseys, quits, and just pieces out, saying that his ankle's injured and it was up to targets, even though he had one more game left to get his bonus contract. So he was released by the Bucks immediately, was actually not immediately released, released text messages that may have been faked between him and Bruce Arians, released text messages between him and Alex Guerrero that had his bank account information in it, was finally released by the Bucks, was revealed to have brought a date to the hotel room the night before the Jets game, and that they tried licking an airplane toilet seat to get COVID back in 2020.
I remember that.
He became president of Donda Sports and rented a $2 million suite at the Super Bowl. He owns the Albany Empire in the Arena League, which is where he was or is supposed to start at some point this year. Turns out he didn't pay anybody and everybody went on a hiatus. He had a warrant out for his arrest. It led to a standoff with the police. He tweeted himself in a Ravens jersey saying that he was back. And I'm sure there's something going on with AB right now.
At this moment, yeah.
And I do have one final quote from AB's Twitter himself. He posted this on April 11th, 2022. And as much of an insane, crazy person is, I think we should all kind of have this confidence in ourselves that he said, "My biggest regret in my career doesn't involve calling my GM a cracker or showing up to the Raiders camp late in a hot air balloon with frozen feet or throwing rocks at a UPS driver. It definitely doesn't involve taking my shirt off and doing a victory lap around Jet Stadium mid-game while throwing up deuces. My biggest regret is I'll never get to see me, Antonio Brown, play a game live. Sure, I can watch the game afterwards, but I can't imagine what that was like for you all to see something like that. Like watching the Beatles or Jesus perform at Red Rocks." Antonio fucking Brown.
And you didn't even put the time that he kicked a dude in the face on the field on there. Like,
no, that was like my first game watching football again as a kid. I was at Chili's and I saw that happen. I was like, I don't think that's allowed.
That was one of the most batshit things I've ever seen. And ironic, I forgot to mention, a lot of people argue that it was a hit by Vontaze Burfict that really like changed who he was as a person.
No, he's always been a maniac.
Yeah.
If you could put that hit in any one of those parts and be like, I don't know where it started.
Yeah, because
that's why he was like taken in the sixth round, right? Is because he had all these like flags on him in college.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Well, I think there was a reason why he wasn't highly recruited either.
Mental illness is a real problem.
Yeah, please take care of yourselves.
No shit. Touch grass.
Okay, do our better health read.
Right. All right, Ryan, who's last?
A Cleveland Brown wide receiver who's probably one of their top five wide receivers of all time.
Is it Ernest Gibbons?
No. Webster Slaughter. He's also got one of the best football names.
That's a cool ass name.
That's a really cool name.
Webster Slaughter. So he was really small in high school and college. His senior year of high school, he was only 140 pounds, so a lot of people didn't really think he could do a lot with football. But he beefed up, and by 1986, he was drafted by the Cleveland Browns in the second round, 43rd overall. Based on the strong recommendation of Browns Hall of Fame receiver Paul Warfield, who was an unofficial scout for the team at the time, during his rookie season, he was listed at 6 feet, 175 pounds. That's it. This guy was skinny. He actually played in all 16 games. His first season, he caught 40 passes for 575 yards and 4 touchdowns. And also played in both games of the postseason for the Browns. Apparently, they made the playoffs that year.
What did you say, 84?
86.
Okay.
In those two games, he caught 6 passes for 86 yards. And his 37-yard catch near the sideline late in the fourth quarter proved crucial when Mark Mosley's field goal was successful to force overtime in the eventual victory. Then they lost in the AFC Championship, and he only had 1 pass for 20 yards and got a dislocated shoulder. Between 88 and 89, he caught a bunch more passes. And let's see, 88, he had a broken arm, so he only got 30 passes for 462 yards. But in 89, he had his breakout year playing in all 16 games, catching 65 passes for 1,236 yards and 6 touchdowns. He actually that year caught a pass from the 43 against the Chicago Bears for the longest Browns passing touchdown in team history that stood for a while. So that was only what, from the 43?
57 yards.
Woof. Damn, the Browns suck.
Yeah. Yeah. 91, 59 passes for 847 yards. And then he left the Browns to go to the Houston Oilers after the 1991 season ended, due to a contract dispute that led to a lawsuit that went in favor of Slaughter and made him a free agent. So now he was on the Oilers, who picked him up. He played in 12 games and 9 as a starter, got 39 passes for 486 yards and 4 touchdowns. That year, the Oilers made the postseason and played the Buffalo Bills. He caught 8 passes for 73 yards while scoring a touchdown. And that was the That was the first of three touchdowns in the second quarter for Houston. So at halftime, they had a lead of 28-3 and were up by 32 in the third quarter.
Ryan, how'd that game turn out? Houston won that game convincingly, right?
Yeah, we'll see.
This is the Chargers. But here we go.
Buffalo scored five straight touchdown passes from that point when the score was 35-24. Slaughter tipped a ball off his hands that resulted in an interception by the Bills at the 23-yard line, and that saw them eventually score and narrow the game even further. The Bills stormed into the lead by three with 3 minutes and 8 seconds to go, but Slaughter caught an 18-yard pass on fourth down at the 34-yard line to help set up the tying field goal. However, an interception in overtime set up by Buffalo for the winning field goal that made the final score 41-38 is the largest comeback in NFL history.
Damn. And that wasn't even Jim Kelly. That was their backup quarterback, Frank Reich.
Right. After that year, his career started to dwindle, and he actually became an ordained minister. And he likes to now go to senior living facilities and read the Bible to residents.
That's peaceful.
Sure. All right, Slaughter, come read me the word of Christ.
Right. Yeah.
He should really call it Lambs to the Slaughter.
Right. That's Webster Slaughter.
All right, Cleveland, that was
bound,
good.
Cleveland bound, great.
All right. All right, so let's talk real quick before we go to break. Everyone's thoughts about our King of the Hill episode. What'd you guys think?
I enjoyed it. I just, in the middle of the episode, I realized Hank Hill is on the spectrum. And then my next thought was, like, out of the four of us, who would we be? I'm not going to make anybody pick being Bill, because that would just kind of suck. But I was like, I think Ryan would be Boomhauer, because Ryan's kind of mysterious. Ryan's got an edge to him. But he's very, very casual, very cool.
I mean, it's in my name. Edge is in my name.
Yeah. Boomcomb.
That's right.
It's a great episode, actually, and like, there's a lot of really cool Southern Gothic elements to it. I was reading a Southern Gothic novel that I just finished while I watched that episode. I'm like, this is the same shit. You got like the inbred bloodline with the decaying manor in the backwoods.
Yeah, right?
And I was like, this is literally Edgar Allan Poe. It just takes place in Cajun country.
Yep.
Yeah.
It was an enjoyable episode.
I like the fact that they were trying to diversify. Like, I like when King of the Hill does this, is when they pick multiple characters and they have different arcs within the same plot.
Yeah. It was a great episode.
My favorite line from that whole episode was at the very end when they pull up and Bill's in the rain getting kicked out. And Peggy's like, have a good weekend, Bill. And he's like, the two of them.
Yeah.
Because he insinuated that he had sex with two of his
with both his cousins. Yeah, his non-cousins. Did you guys watch the Aqua Teen with Bart Oates?
I did.
Yeah, I didn't watch it during the week, but I've seen it. Yeah, it's
so good.
It's a great. I love all the Aqua Teen.
I have an Aqua Teen story. So when I went to get our tire repaired at work, I made some reference to a guy. I don't remember what it was. I think it was like an Adult Swim thing. And then he like very casually and like conspicuously leaned over to me and he's like, do you ever like smoke weed and then watch Aqua Teen Hunger Force? And I was like, I like the show, but yeah, I don't really like, at the time I'm like, I don't smoke, so that's cool. And he's like, yeah, don't do that or do like mushrooms and watch Xavier Renegade Angel. And I was like,
oh yeah.
How much money do I owe you for the tire? Have a great day, sir.
In my dorm room, in my dorm floor in college, there was a Halo tournament, showing my age here. There was a Halo tournament in the lounge, and my room was on the opposite side. I was on the far end of the hall. And while all the RAs and all the dorks were playing Halo, I was like, everyone come smoke weed in my dorm room.
Yeah.
And Aqua Teen was on, and there was a dude that was like freaking out. Like, what the fuck are we watching? What is this? And Bart Oates, that episode is actually like a lot more structured than than a regular Aqua Teen. And like, you know, it's chaos because it's Aqua Teen, but like him being like, look, we got to go kill Linda Hamilton because she's going to act in the Terminator. That was just a wonderful way to end the episode. Any last thoughts on our guest stars before we take a break?
I think that's good.
Yeah.
I like both those shows. That's my summation.
good shows. All right, let's take a break. We'll see you soon. Cool. And goodbye. Hey, friends. Tony from TH Fantasy here with a quick programming note just to remind you what we're going to be doing going forward is we're going to be splitting the summer research episodes up into two smaller bits
for your listening enjoyment
because I don't know how many people have time to listen to 2 hours of football talk in their lives, not to mention just in one sitting. So what we'll be doing is we'll do our number of the week in our first episode, and our second episode will be the last two of our three team reviews for the week. Hopefully you guys enjoy. We put together a ton of research on them, and if you have anything you want to add or tell us that we're wrong about, please reach out. Just make sure you are subscribing and giving us money because that's really important. Thanks. We're back. It's the start of True Degenerate Season team previews. You might end up hearing these split over a couple different episodes, and we have drawn straws. No, we haven't, but Ryan's going to go first because we wanted to start. Here's the thing. We want to pitch these segments to you guys, and we thought, what better way than the Tampa Bay Buccaneers?
The 101. Right.
I mean, come on, guys. I wanted to get, you know, my worst ranked team. We went through everyone's records last week and Tampa was my worst ranked team. I projected them at 3 wins. It's not going to be good this year. So
let's talk about it
off the start. Let's talk about the NFC South, who actually interestingly enough, it's, I think, the only division this year that's going to have 4 brand new starting quarterbacks. I might be wrong, but I feel like that's true.
You mean like compared to who started week one for those teams last year?
Compared to who was playing, who was the starting quarterback last year?
Well, because, you know, Ritter played the last couple games in Atlanta, but...
Right, but ultimately, what's... goddamn.
Yeah, Mariota was the guy for most
Mariota
of the year.
Was the guy.
That's how forgettable he is.
Yeah.
And like, we got Derek Carr, New Orleans, and... Yeah, they're all new quarterbacks. So it's going to be an interesting NFC South year, but not for Tampa Bay. So Todd Bowles is now the head coach after being the defensive coordinator for 3 seasons. So with that in mind, I think this team is going to do a lot to help their defense this year. And Todd Bowles really kept most of the defensive coaches that were there, obviously, because he's got some chemistry with them. But we have a new offensive coordinator, Dave Canales, who I know nothing about. I don't know. Do you guys know anything about him?
Where's he coached? I have no idea.
I don't remember. I didn't write that down.
Okay.
Clearly not important.
Let's see. So they kept the fourth the defensive line coach, Casey Rogers. That's his 4th season. They kept the passing game coordinator, and somehow he's the passing game coordinator, but also the inside linebackers coach.
Perfect.
Larry Foote, so that tells you how defensive minded they're going to be this year. And they brought back Keith Armstrong in his 4th year as special teams coordinator.
So Dave Canales was the quarterbacks coach in Seattle from 18 to 19, the passing coordinator 20 to 21, and then the quarterback's coach in 2022. So, could be a Geno revival of whatever quarterback okay. Ryan tells us we should like.
He's got some real great talent to work with that quarterback at Baker Mayfield, Kyle Trask, and John Wolford. So we'll see how that works out. We've all been seeing the shit in the media. Baker's first pass on in warm-ups and stuff, and it's Yow. Just not good.
Ouch.
Not good. So basically, right now, we don't know anything. I mean, we're still 2 months removed from training camp, obviously. So it's going to be, they're saying right now, it's going to be anyone's game, and that doesn't say a lot for Baker Mayfield, who clearly should be a better quarterback than Kyle Trask, but I don't know. I don't know what's going on with that. I mean, Trask got to study a few years with Brady, but obviously didn't really play.
Do we feel this is like a last year where we're like, who's starting, Drew Lock or Geno Smith? Right? Where it's like, here's the bottom of the absolute barrel, but we're going to trust the guy who is going to go based on system as opposed to quote unquote talent.
Yes. And also Tom Brady came out today and said he's definitely done playing.
That was an AI. He looked like an AI in that video.
I did hear too, now that he bought that minority stake in the Raiders, even if he wanted to come back and play, he would need 24 votes out of the entire league owners in order to do so. I don't think that would happen.
I think it would. There's money to be made.
FTX sponsorships.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah, if you look at it as a marketing thing, yeah, I guess.
A player owner, that would be insane.
But he would need 3/4 of the votes from the owner to come back. Sure. So not looking good for Tampa Bay.
Who's the opening day week one starter for Tampa Bay?
I think it's going to be Baker. Why else would you pay him to come there?
True.
He's not tutoring anybody.
But I guess who knows? Maybe Tampa, you know, they're looking like contention to be have the first round pick for next year's draft.
Yep.
I mean, their running game still not that great. They've got Rashad White still. They backed him up with Chase Edmonds. I mean, Keyshawn Vaughn showed some flashes last year. And then they got Patrick Laird.
Fullback, baby.
Yeah. The big question, though, this year, and I think we mentioned it last episode, was who's going to be the better wide receiver, Godwin or Evans?
Okay.
I think it's going to be Godwin. I think all of us agreed it was going to be Godwin. Mike Evans, who knows? I mean, they're not going to be passing that much, honestly. So it could be a toss-up. But to round it out, they still have Russell Gage and then a slew of other no-names. Trey Palmer, Devin Tompkins, Kalen Geiger, Tay Barber, and then a couple other no-names.
Don't they have, like, the worst cap in the league, too?
Yeah, they front-loaded everything. Or they back-loaded everything for that Super Bowl run.
Yeah. I do like, you know, Kate Otten's a good tight end. He'll still get involved. And actually, he might actually get more involved this year just because of the fact that they're going to be a lot of short passes and checkdowns and shit like that. So I like his prospects. I'll probably play him a little bit in DFS. I don't want a lot of him in redraft, obviously, because he's on a horrible team.
Can I be bold? I don't want any Kate Otten in redraft.
Yeah.
Brave of me to say.
Payne Durham, Coe Kleft, and David Wells to round it out at tight end. So if Otten goes down, oh my God, this is going to be bad.
Dude, Payne Durham had the coolest offseason pick. I think I showed you he shaved his head and he's got the chops and he just looks angry as fuck. Like,
I thought that was fake. I legitimately thought that was from an 80s action movie.
I know. It looks like he's in The Longest Yard. I'm like, this dude... Football guy. Ryan, can I ask you a question?
Sure.
Rashad White or Damian Pierce?
In redraft?
Yep.
Dameon Pierce.
Okay. Same what about in redraft, Rashad White or Cam Akers?
I'm probably going to go Rashad White.
Dude, you got three bullets or two bullets. One bullet and a gun. You got to pick two of them. I'm shooting myself in the head.
Fair.
Let's take a look at what they did in the draft. Their first pick overall, number 19. They drafted a defensive lineman, Kalijah Kenny. Coming out of Pittsburgh is 2022 season. He had 14.5 sacks. Not bad.
He plays like Aaron Donald. I'm not going to lie to you. I don't know if it's going to be that good at the next level, but he did play like Aaron Donald.
Is he in a dual-wield helmets?
So, like I said, Todd Bowles is a defensive-minded head coach. So I'm sure that influenced that first pick. But with pick number two, 48th overall, they went and beefed up the offensive line with Cody Mouch.
Yeah, Cody Mouch, dude. That's the guy. Shane, you know who Cody Mouch is, right? Yeah,
no teeth guy.
Yeah, he's the no teeth guy.
Yeah,
he's the guy that started college as like a 240-pound tight end and finished college missing his two front teeth, was like 320 and plays tackle. Like
he got happier every year.
FCS O lineman of the year last year.
Yep,
from North Dakota State.
Yep.
They went defense again with their third and their fifth. They did not have a fourth round pick. So at 82, they got outside linebacker Yaya Diaby from Louisville.
Love that.
Nine sacks in 2022. Then they grabbed an inside linebacker, Servosha Dennis, also from Pittsburgh. He actually had a decent year last year. For a linebacker, he had 94 tackles and 7 sacks. That's really good for a linebacker.
Yeah.
And as we said before, also in the fifth round, 171 overall, they went with tight end Payne Durham.
Yep.
He had 56 receptions as a tight end in 2022. He's brought on mainly to be a blocker. He's 250 pounds, like 6'2". So not a beast of a tight end, but who knows? I mean, we got a lot of rookie talent at tight end with Kate Otten in his second year. So let's see what they can do. They had 3 6 round picks. They went with a defensive back out of Kansas State with 71 tackles, Josh Hayes. And at pick 191, they took a wide receiver out of Nebraska who actually had a surprising season for the way Nebraska played last year. Nebraska was not good last year at all. Like normally Nebraska puts up a good fight because that's like the only sports team they have really in Nebraska. But for some reason they did not jive this year. But this guy actually ended up with a 1,000-yard season. He had 71 receptions for 1,043 yards and 9 touchdowns last year.
Damn, so what's his name?
Trey Palmer.
Okay.
I think
he was on the list. So he's got some prospect there, especially with the uncertainty of when Mike Evans is going to be done and if Godwin's going to re-sign with the team after this year. I don't know. I don't remember watching film. Did you watch any film on him, Shane or Tony?
No.
I think like maybe like one clip and I was like, yeah, I don't care.
Then they're to round out their last pick. They got another linebacker from Eastern Michigan, 12 sacks in 2022, Jose Ramirez.
Jose Ramirez. Oh man.
Yeah.
That guy's going to make some plays.
Yeah, and in the sixth round, too, almost 200th pick.
I really like a lot of the guys that Tampa Bay picked in this draft.
Yeah, they're going to, like I said earlier, they're going to be heavily defensive-minded with the way Todd Bowles has just been elevated to head coach and previously been the defensive coordinator. Obviously, they went let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Yeah, 5 out of their 8 picks, they went defense, so.
Makes sense, man. Like, why invest any draft capital on a team that's going to suck shit on the offensive side?
Yeah, right.
True.
So,
really, yeah. Sorry. Go ahead,
Tony. No, go ahead. I was just going to ask. I'm looking at 4 for 4 in PPR rankings. Mike Evans, wide receiver 30. Chris Godwin, wide receiver 31.
Dude, it's Robert Woods versus Cooper Kupp 2021 all over again.
There it is. Would you take DJ Moore over either of them?
I think you have to.
Yeah, right.
Like, I know we're not, like, we'll get into DJ Moore later. Whenever. Oh, I have Chicago. That's right. When we cover that. But I think, like, the ceiling is higher in that offensive scheme. So, like, in the fourth round, you're kind of, like, at this ugly crossroads of what do? Where you got to swing for ceiling every time, right?
Yeah.
Right. Really quick, I just wanted to go through their schedule. And we'll kind of keep it tally here. Like I said, I only predicted them at 3 wins. As of right now, for some reason, their over under is still at 6.5. I don't understand how. And when we go through the schedule, you'll see. Technically, their schedule is only the 22nd toughest this year. Okay, so first week they play Minnesota. That's a loss.
Right.
Second week they play Chicago. That's most likely going to be a loss.
I would hope so.
Right. And then they play Philly. I mean, they're in Super Bowl last year, so that's a loss.
0-3.
My boy Derek Carr, they're going to be playing New Orleans week 4. That's going to be a loss.
Is that home or away?
That's in the Superdome. So yeah,
that's a loss.
Yeah. Then they're one of those teams that have a really early bye. Their bye week's in week 5, which I think is really early for bye weeks. Like, why are we starting in week 5? Then they got to play freaking, what is that, 12 more weeks straight? But
yeah. just 2 weeks, dude. 2 bye weeks a season.
Do 2 bye weeks. Add an extra week to the season and give us 2 byes.
Why not? So week 5 against Detroit, that's a loss.
That's 0-5.
Right. Week 6 at Atlanta. I guess that we could call that a toss up at this point.
Let's give them a win.
Let's give them a win. All right. Then week 7, they're at Buffalo, so they'll be lucky to score a touchdown.
that's a loss.
So week 8, they're at Tennessee, or they're at home versus Tennessee. That could be a win.
I don't think so.
No?
No.
Okay.
Well, they beat up the defense, though. I think it's 50-50 because, like,
well, then let's split it. Let's say they win either one of those, either the Saints game or the Tennessee game. So that puts them at 2 wins.
Sure.
They'll sneak one of those out.
All right. Then next week is at San Francisco. Most likely a loss. Toss up Indianapolis next week.
Shane?
Fuck, AR is going to run roughshod over them.
Okay, we're still at 2 wins.
All right, then they're versus Carolina. I think that's a loss.
I think they split with Carolina.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Then they play Atlanta again.
Okay.
So that could actually be another split.
Okay.
Shit, I had them at 3, so we're at a possible 4 right now. Then they play Green Bay.
That'll be close. That might be. Where is it at?
It's in Lambeau.
In December?
Yeah, it's going to be a loss.
That's a loss.
Yeah. Then they play Jacksonville. That's a loss.
Mm-hmm.
Then they got New Orleans again. We already called. Yeah, okay.
We're floating around 5 right now.
And then they're at Carolina, so I'm going to call that a loss. I'll call their at home against Carolina win, but not in Carolina.
So we're floating between 5 and 6.
Yeah. So it's definitely under. I still don't understand why the over-under is 6.5, but.
That division's bad. That's probably.
Yeah, right.
Fluky.
They're expecting them to split with everyone in their division.
So prior to last season, Todd Bowles held a 6-1 record against rookie quarterbacks. And like I said, they're going to be playing a decent amount of rookie quarterbacks this year. But they lost to Kenny Pickett. They lost to Brock Purdy. They lost to Ritter. Although the loss to Ritter came in the final regular season game when they really didn't play a lot of their starters.
Right.
They were one of four teams to lose multiple games to rookie starters.
That sounds bad. Is that bad?
Yeah. I mean, I don't really know how much more we can say.
I don't really want anything to do with them in fantasy. I think Rashad White and Chris Godwin, I'd kick the tires on if they were a discount.
I took Rashad White in the 7th round this week as my first running back off the board.
Love it.
Yeah. That rounds out the Tampa Bay Bucks, unless you guys want to talk about anything else.
I think that's good enough. You're not drafting a quarterback from there. You're not drafting a tight end. You're seeing who's around round 4 or 5 for Godwin and Evans, but you're most likely being like, give me
I'd rather just let, you know, some other idiot that's in our league draft anyone from that team. Really, yeah. I'm not going to have any part of their team in redraft. I don't think
they're going to
it's cheap.
They're going to have the name recognition like Adam Thielen, right? Where someone's going to draft them just on name recognition alone, not knowing that Baker Mayfield or Kyle Trask are that bad.
Yeah.
Right. Right.
Touch me, I'm the franchise.